I'm just back from what are called the exurbs. Now, these are American neighborhoods at the far-off fringes of metropolitan areas where the mortgage crisis, high gas prices, and lousy transportation options have come together to produce desperate conditions for families. While the financial crisis has been getting lots of attention, whoever is elected president will have to figure out what to do with America's neglected transportation networks that were laid out for an earlier time, back when gas was cheap. Steve Brand produced our report, the first in a PBS-wide series on the nation's infrastructure that we call Blueprint America.
At 4 a.m. in Hemet, California, the sky still black with night, Robert Schley is beginning his daily commute from the fringes of Riverside County to his job as a telecommunications technician in San Diego, 72 miles south.
It's a nice drive, though. No traffic this early in the morning.
Before hitting the road, he stops off five houses down to pick up his buddy, Michael Lauridsen, with whom he's been carpooling for about a year now, ever since gas crossed $3 a gallon. Both men and their families have decided it's best that they work the very early shift to avoid the region's notorious traffic jams, which can easily turn an hour's drive into two or three.
Obviously, if your car keeps moving, you get better gas mileage.
But there are costs other than the gasoline.
You know, my youngest son always asks, Daddy's not home, Daddy's at work already. You know, it's still dark outside. Yeah, Daddy has to leave really early in the morning.
Hemet is so far out of the cities of Los Angeles and San Diego that you might call it not a suburb, but an exurb. And with pump prices so high, Robert makes the most of filling up his hybrid with the least expensive gas he can find.
Every last drop.
His buddy Michael is just glad to see the work week ending.
A little tired, but it's Friday, so I'll survive. Kick back for the weekend, Charger game Sunday, go Chargers.
It's not just people in car-crazy Southern California who are surviving like this. How is it that so many Americans are stuck living so far away from their jobs with little choice but to fill her up and get driving if they want a paycheck? The answer has to do with planning, how we decide on the infrastructure linking our cities and towns.
If we had known then what we know now, we would have
stayed where we were.
Yeah.
The fact that there was virtually no train or bus service just didn't factor into their thinking when Robert and his wife Debbie decided to buy a modest four-bedroom house in Hemet 7 years ago.
We didn't realize how quickly we would run cars into the ground. We didn't realize how high gas prices would go.
It was a classic American proposition, whether in San Diego, Dallas, Chicago, Boston, wherever. Move way out to the exurbs, buy a dream house you could never have afforded close to work. The commute would be the only hassle, something that looked like a small price to pay for a house with a decent backyard and a decent school for the kids. It's what millions of American families have done, never suspecting that being totally dependent on the automobile could one day radically alter their lives.
7 years ago, it was totally worth it. Gas was $2 a gallon. Housing prices were low. It paid to live here and work away from home.
How's it been working out for you, though?
Well,
until about the last year, pretty good.
Then gas prices topped $4 a gallon.
It's doubled.
So probably when you were evaluating the house, were you thinking much about transportation prices?
No.
Today it's almost all they think about. Even though Robert's Prius gets 44 miles a gallon, the family's monthly transportation costs come to $1,600.
Well, we don't do half the things we used to do. We don't go to the movies anymore. Don't go out to eat anymore. There's a lot of things. I mean, our food purchases are different.
His carpool buddy Michael, who works as an auto mechanic, has pretty much abandoned his gas-sucking SUV.
If I had to drive my Suburban every day to work, I'd be filling up every 2 days. It's a 30-gallon tank, and we'll keep the math simple, $4 a gallon. It's $120 every 2 days, looking at $500 a week just in gas. I mean, who has an extra $500 a week they can throw away on gas? I don't. I've got three boys. The grocery bill alone's killing me.
I mean, during the summer, we stayed home. We didn't get to go to the beach. We didn't get to go to friends' house to play. We stayed home and played video games.
Just to keep from having to fill up that vehicle too regularly.
Right.
Their dream house in Exurbia has become a kind of prison for them. Utopia, as imagined by older generations, it is not.
This superb one-direction highway, with its seven lanes accommodating traffic.
Back at the 1939 World's Fair in New York, the most popular exhibit by far was Futurama, thrilling us with a vision of America centered around the automobile.
Traffic may move safely and easily without loss of speed.
Then in the 1950s, President Eisenhower made good on the vision, launching a massive infrastructure project, the Interstate Highway System. But that's about where the planning stopped. It wasn't all that long before this ideal gave way to this reality.
Because we've built so many roads, ever outward, we have covered the whole of this continent with residential, suburban housing developments that are ever farther away from the urban core. And that was fine when energy was cheap and there was lots of it, but apparently those days are ending.
Gloria Oland is vice president of Reconnecting America, a nonprofit group that calls for a radical restructuring of the way Americans live and get to work, one that is not centered around the car.
What is wrong with sprawl? I mean, it is the direction we as Americans have been going for many decades.
The problem is that we've sprawled too far out. So now the connection between jobs and housing has gotten to be very difficult. And now, of course, obviously with a concern about climate change and especially with concern about rising gas prices, it's no longer tenable for people to drive those kinds of distances.
Oland's group conducted a study which found that people living in far-out exurban communities were spending 25% of their income just on transportation.
Whereas people who live in more urban neighborhoods where they're close to jobs and where they have the option to take a bus or a train or to walk or bike spend only 9% of their income on transportation. So that's a 16% savings.
And there's evidence to suggest that transportation costs may be helping to drive the ongoing mortgage meltdown. Right about the time gas prices went over $2 a gallon, housing prices began to tank. And they dropped most heavily in suburban fringe areas around the country, places like Riverside County, where homeowners have the longest commutes. Things are so bad, some policy wonks are calling these distressed exurbs rings of fire.
When we moved here, every house was full, a lot of families, a lot of kids, and they're all moving away. I'm not sure where everybody's going. The house right across the street, that one's been empty for about 2 years. And the people on the other side of us, they'll be moving any day now. There's another house, and it's been empty for about a year now. It's been foreclosed on.
More than 27,000 homes in Riverside County have been repossessed since the beginning of 2008, and home prices have dropped by 35%.
Do you have one of those mortgages that changes?
We do have an arm, yeah.
Is that becoming a problem?
In March,
it adjusts.
It should go up 2%, about $600 per month. And
it'll go up 600 more?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Is that going to be tough?
It's going to be tough.
We can't pay that. We can't. We can't refinance because we owe $335,000 and the house is worth $192,000.
A year ago, our house was worth almost $500,000.
It's worth less than what we originally bought it for.
We're about a month behind on our mortgage. Collections. This is a credit card. Another credit card.
So what you don't need is paying more and more for gas, even in the hybrid car, for Rob to get to work.
Yeah, right. It still adds up. But, you know, and we know we got ourselves into this. I mean,
we do. A year ago we had excellent credit, and it's pretty bad right now.
So what was the thing that sort of tipped it over for you? You're cruising along. What sort of changed that outlook?
Gasoline.
It was the gas.
I don't even know. I mean, it went up so fast. Everything happened so fast. It was like, you know, up 10 cents a week, 12 cents a day, whatever it was. I mean, I remember driving by one day going, I can't believe it just went up 11 cents from this morning.
We've become far too dependent on the car. We have to start considering building communities more like we used to build them.
What Oland and other transit advocates envision for our future are communities where houses and jobs and shops are located closer together, a community that encourages walking, biking, and easy access to public transportation. This South Pasadena neighborhood is a good example of what they have in mind. Through a public-private partnership, the area was rebuilt around a new light rail station.
So you could walk to places, go to cafes, go to a restaurant.
Dolores Roybal Saltarelli moved to this neighborhood 3 years ago. She has a 20-minute commute on the Metro Gold Line to her job in L.A., where she works as a transportation planner.
I grew up having a very long commute from where I went to school and where I lived, and that it took 3 hours out of my day. And I never really got to enjoy my neighborhood very much. So I said, as an adult, I really want something different. I don't want to make commuting my life's destiny, I guess.
And we decided that for us, a little less space and a lot less hassle was worth more to us than having a five-bedroom house.
So they bought this two-bedroom condo in a new housing development just around the corner from the Gold Line.
And the scale is pedestrian. And so there's an intimacy that makes it feel like it's a small town.
We have a bakery, we have a video store, a grocery store. I mean, everything that we really need to get to, a pharmacy.
All so convenient, the Saltarellis recently sold their second car.
When gas prices started to skyrocket, we just didn't really notice. And we maybe spend $100 a month on gas. Out here in L.A., you can't really get anywhere in the car anyway. So, you know, I see it as something where I get on the train, I'm with a bunch of other people who have had that mental breakthrough that said, what was I doing in the car going nowhere at 5 miles an hour for when I could be here enjoying my book or my iPod?
The Saltarellis are not alone in abandoning the car culture. The Federal Highway Administration found that since last November, when gas hit $3.10 a gallon, Americans have driven 53 billion fewer miles than they did over the same period the year before. Many are trying out public transit. Ridership around the country is the highest it's been in 50 years. That's music to the ears of Jane Reifer, an unpaid evangelist for public transit in Southern California.
We're going to Union Station and then we're going to switch?
Exactly.
We're going to go mm-hmm. Okay.
And we're going to get on this LA Union Station at 8:34.
She offered to show me how easy it is to get from her home in Fullerton, here in Orange County, to Pasadena, a trip which can easily take an hour and a half by car during rush hour. Our first leg, this Metrolink commuter train.
So we'll be in LA in about 40 minutes.
40-minute trip?
Yeah, it's a straight shot directly to LA, so we'll get there faster than anyone can drive it.
Reifer has lived and worked in Southern California for the past 27 years, but in a very un-California way.
You do not have a driver's license.
I do not have a driver's license. In California, that makes me a Martian. And they're already thinking, now she must have epilepsy or she lost her license because she drinks too much or whatever it is. But no, it's because I wanted to show that you can get around Southern California without a car.
People who live in areas where public transit is more a part of life, let's say New York, may not fully understand what it's like in California.
That's
it's not. You're making the case that actually this pretty good public transit options, but there's a cultural issue that has to be surmounted. That's
yes, it's a cultural issue, but it's a choice I'd like to see more people make.
Turns out there actually used to be a lot of public transit in Southern California.
In the older areas, all through Southern California, transit was normal. It was a given. If you look at an old
Pacific Electric map, you'll be shocked at how much service there was in the 20s. Should I show you that?
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
This is the old system.
Well, let's take a look at this. This would have been from
1926. And we were in Fullerton.
Oh my, this is unbelievable.
You can see that the service existed before freeways.
Okay, here's downtown Los Angeles. Look at this. These are train lines and light rail.
It's just unbelievable.
So these are all the stops you could have taken back in the day, as it were?
Mm-hmm.
So some set of geniuses at some point in Southern California's history decided we're going to remove all this and stick in freeways.
It's kind of hard to believe, isn't it?
At one time, Los Angeles had one of the biggest streetcar systems in the country. Then in the 1940s, a holding company owned in part by GM, Firestone, Standard Oil, and Phillips Petroleum bought the streetcar lines. Within 20 years, all of them had been dismantled, and mass transit has been playing catch-up ever since.
We can reduce the time that people spend in their cars and spend, of course, more time, therefore, with their families, while we are cutting down on traffic, on gridlock, and on sprawl.
Less than 2 weeks ago, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed the most comprehensive anti-sprawl bill in the nation, rewarding housing and transportation projects that reduce both greenhouse gas emissions and driving time. And just last week, Congress got on board, approving a $13 billion measure to fund Amtrak and mass transit. It includes money for safety improvements.
We just collided with something, I don't know what.
That was prompted in part by the recent fatal collision of a Metrolink commuter train with a freight train just outside Los Angeles. As horrific as that accident was, statistics still show that train travel remains much safer than driving an automobile. And while we're making comparisons, here's another one. The amount of money Washington spends on mass transit does not hold a candle to what it spends on roads.
Public transportation has long been the poor stepchild of the American transportation system. We spend 80% of all federal transportation dollars on building roads and 20% on building public transit.
Gloria Oland and other transit advocates would like to reverse that equation.
What you're saying is now is the time to think about this. The gas prices are up. People are focused on this issue.
And yet it's surprising to me how neither presidential candidate is talking about these issues.
Neither John McCain nor Barack Obama have made transportation a high priority as they seek out votes. When we reached out to their campaigns, each pointed us to their candidates' websites. And it turns out they do have very different positions. McCain calls for reducing our dependence on foreign oil by giving automakers incentives to come up with lower emissions cars. It says nothing explicitly about public transportation, although McCain voted against that Amtrak bill last week. Obama voted for it, and his platform calls for a $60 billion national infrastructure bank. That bank would support high-speed trains, similar to a $10 billion project California voters will get to decide on in November.
Moving at speeds in excess of 200 miles per hour, high-speed trains.
The new line would cut a six-hour drive from Los Angeles to San Francisco to 2.5 hours by high-speed rail.
High-speed trains are a clean technology.
Public opinion, currently in favor of the train, is being watched around the country as a bellwether for how seriously voters view a future less dependent on the automobile. Supporters see it as one answer to gridlock, dirty air, and a statewide population expected to grow past 45 million people by the year 2030. Opponents see it as a waste of money that can never, ever pay for itself.
I think it's well-intentioned, but very optimistic. And I don't believe it will come to fruition.
Professor James Moore is a civil engineer and urban mass transit expert at the University of Southern California.
You think that money could be better used somewhere else when it comes to thinking about the state's transportation system?
Almost anywhere else. If you really want to support intercity travel, it's much cheaper to expand airports than to build precision guideways that are hundreds of miles long.
Moore is not a lover of large government projects. He believes in buses, especially bus routes run by private companies that can easily adapt to changing commuting patterns.
We've gotten used to providing transportation services in a very inefficient way. We could accomplish a great deal when it comes to public transit simply by making it legal for entrepreneurs to sell transit services.
Jane Reifer says it really doesn't matter to her whether it's publicly or privately financed, so long as mass transit is given the same priority as roads, new airports, sidewalks, and streetlights.
Where are we? Metro Red Line, but that's not what we want.
We want the Gold Line.
I think so. It's going to go to Pasadena, right?
Yes. And that's down here.
By now, Jane and I have arrived at Union Station in Los Angeles, where we get off to switch trains. Our final leg, the L.A. Metro's light rail line to Pasadena. The entire travel time to get to our destination, about an hour. The cost of doing this every day with a monthly pass, $168.
I think it's Southern California's best-kept secret how much transit service there actually is.
But spend time in the exurbs, and you'll find that not every Californian is as enthusiastic about public transportation.
I don't know about the bus, you know, or public transportation because I've never had to deal with it or take it.
You've never set foot on a bus?
No. No, I've never had to.
I don't ride a bus, and I don't ride the trolley. I've been on a bus once in my life and a trolley once, and I was much younger than I am now.
It's not my cup of tea. I don't know. Surrounded by strangers. I don't know. Just not my thing.
In November, you can vote for the government to borrow money to start work on the high-speed train. This thing presumably would cruise right into San Diego. It could save you some time.
Actually, I mean, since we started talking about this the last week or so, I mean, yeah, I considered a train. Yeah, with a couple stops in between, that wouldn't be half bad.
For many Americans around the country this election season, it's tough to contemplate a different future when just making ends meet now has become such a struggle.
Your car is your freedom. You go where you want, when you want, but at $4 a gallon, you don't go many places anymore.
Robert and Debbie have decided it may just be time to find a way out of the exurbs and move closer to San Diego.
So remember back when you were thinking about this place, the dream of exurbia, getting out to the fringe suburb where you could get an affordable house, some open space.
Lots of open space.
Yeah.
Doesn't work out that way.
Not anymore.
I mean, you wanted to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
we planned to stay.
Yeah, we knew how much money we borrowed, and you know, we're honest people. We want to pay our bills.
And never knew that the bottom was going to drop out.